This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Dorinda Wood, and I was the costume designer on Star Trek The Next Generation Season 2, and you are listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey Hot.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and joined with me today is the wonderful Joe Keegan and the amazing Justin Ozer. Joe, how are you?
Joe is good. Joe is excited. Joe got his new Tesla Model 3 yesterday, and Joe is
very exciting.
Can't wait to finish podcasting so I can go out and sit and play in it and watch Netflix and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
I see. So the car is more important than us now. Well, that's fine.
No, it's just that new shiny thing. I'm like a magpie. The new shiny thing on my horizon is the thing I want to be doing right now.
I see. So, okay. That's
Justin, like how about you?
Doing well. Yeah, I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks, Amy. You've been on the cruise. So tell us, how was the cruise?
Well, it was quite amazing. I cannot believe how different it was from Star Trek Las Vegas, the convention. So on the ship, they had it all decked out, and they had some props and a museum and, you know, signs everywhere, and they decked out the bars. So it was Quark's bar and everything. And they had, of course, panels. But what I appreciated on the cruise was not only did they have panels, but they had like game shows, and they had Hollywood squares where the actors and the actors read some scripts that they had written. I mean, it just was so different to see them in their creative element that I wish they would do more things like that at Star Trek Las Vegas. So for that purpose, it was really quite amazing to see them in their true element doing different creative things rather than just talking about shows that are, you know, 50 years old.
Yeah, I have to say, I saw on social media the different things that were coming out of it, images and videos, and I was quite jealous because they were doing some incredible things that you never see. Like one of the things that I saw that they did, I don't know if you got to see this, but one of the things that had happened, I think it was in the late 90s, was there was this audio drama called Q versus Spock.
That was so good.
And the original one had John Delancey and Leonard Nimoy. Of course, unfortunately, Leonard Nimoy's passed away, but they did like a revival of it with John Delancey and Ethan Peck as Spock.
Yes.
So I'm like, so you saw that?
Yeah, I was for that, and it was so good. And Ethan Peck, of course, amazing, yeah.
And they were doing, like, yeah, all kinds of stuff that was like, wow, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, and they did, like, readings for the Dawson trials where they were talking about the school board and intelligent design creationism versus, you know, the science of evolution, and they all the actors were there, and they were reading different parts, and and they did this really cool thing with Mary Chifo, like whose line is it anyways, like improv skits and stuff, and
incredible.
Mary is hilarious. I mean, it was awesome.
Oh wow, you made us so jealous, but I'm glad you got to experience that, you know, in a time when you could still, you know, freely take a cruise. So
yeah, we got in just under the wire.
Yeah,
we were able to disembark, and I got home safely, and no one got sick on the ship. So it was all good.
Good. Well, I'm so glad you had a great experience. But I just wanted to ask about that because we were wondering. That's why you were away for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And thank you for those who filled in, Rob Chapman and Who's the one that's coming out this Tuesday?
Mike Wong.
Yes, Mike Wong. Yes. So very excited.
Yeah. So we had some great guests, but there is nothing to compare to Amy. So we're glad you're here.
Oh, well, let's get to some Babel Conference feedback. This is from Earl Grey 314, where we compared Balance of Terror and Neutral Zone, and we had guest Tim Robertson on. So, Justin, why don't you read that one, since you weren't there for that?
I wasn't there for that one, but I enjoyed the discussion. So, Karen Chupla says, I'm with Joe. I like the frozen people. The Neutral Zone story is, in my opinion, not that riveting. Well, thank you for your comment, Karen. I really like the frozen people, too. I think it's a fun part of it. And I like the Neutral Zone. I think it's good and entertaining overall. Balance of Terror is far superior. But yeah, I think it's good, and I like the frozen people. So there you go, Joe.
Well, Karen, this is true. Do you know what? They're both good episodes, but what really wins it is Karen. I really like Karen now. She's like Karen for the win. So thank you, Karen.
Yes. She's with you.
Yeah. Mark Keller says, Balance of Terror is great, but I think the Neutral Zone is just average. The frozen guy from Texas is really corny, and I dislike the big forehead and shoulder pads look. TOS and Picard Romulans are much better looking. They were, however, some great TNG Romulan episodes later on. Yeah, thanks for your comment, Mark. Yes, I think the Texas guy is just intentionally corny. It's just a throwback.
I think he's meant to be funny. Yeah.
And then there's the old capitalist guy, Mr. Vanderhuizen or whatever his name is. Yeah, they're just like ancient stereotypes, aren't they? I will repeat what I've said before. I'm really enjoying the way the Romulans are portrayed in Picard. And they're now no longer monolithic. There's every different type of Romulan you've ever seen.
I don't think we've seen any big shoulder pads in Picard, right?
But there are still shoulder pads that are very evident. So I love that part because I just laugh every time I see the big shoulder pads. And that's how you know you're dealing with a Romulan because they got the big shoulder pads.
We've not seen any of like Shinzon's weird skinny up shoulder pads. With the black kind of pearlescent material. That was just a weird disco Romulan.
But we can talk about Picard Romulans later.
Maybe. Okay. All right.
So Kimberly Lawler writes in, Amy, I hope your students like the example of logical reasoning from the show. As a student, I would have loved to have had a teacher who showed Star Trek clips in class. Well, thank you, Kimberly. I don't know how much my students enjoy it, but I sure like sharing it with them. So they just have to suffer through since it's my classroom.
Yeah, and some of them, I mean, connect with it, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I wish I would have had a teacher that did that. I never had a teacher who ever showed Star Trek in my class, and maybe that's why I didn't become a fan until I was 30 years old.
Right. I'm trying to start them young. That's for sure.
Yeah. Might as well.
All right. Well, we have some more from Earl Grey 315, Picard's best partner with guest Rob Chapman. And I just wanted to say thank you for including me in that discussion because I really like Anij. You guys certainly did have a love letter to Nella.
We did. And but I wanted to put in your points for Anij, and we had a good discussion about her.
Yes, you did.
But Vera Bible says, I love Lieutenant Commander Nella Darren. Their shared appreciation of music and Picard opening up about his experience in the Inner Light was lovely. I wish that character had been around longer, as it was so enjoyable seeing Picard having a nice home life and being happy. It so rarely happens on this show. Your point about Darren bringing out the best in Picard is spot on. I couldn't agree more. Well, thanks, Vera. I mean, you're our new favorite listener because you completely agreed with me, Joe, and Rob in loving Nella Darren. And I know we'll get to this, for some listeners, not as much into Nella Darren, but it was interesting that we had that alignment because, Joe, I didn't know that you would feel that way before we started on the episode.
Oh, it's just easy because we have so much in common. Me and Nella Darren, well, she's a woman,
okay. I thought you were going to say me and you have a lot in common. That's okay.
Well, we do. This love of Star Trek. But yeah, the science. I did astronomy at university with physics. She was an astrophysicist. And she played the piano. And yeah. So
for me, it makes sense. Yeah. But, it's kind of a minority opinion, I think.
It's a strange opinion not to have. Yvette Blackman says, this episode was a Nella Darren love fest with an eye roll emoji. I think the three of you love her more than Jean-Luc ever did, with a face palm emoji. I can't wait for next week's episode with a smiley, shy, embarrassed emoji, I think that is, possibly. It's got rosy cheeks, though, which means like a shy embarrassment, maybe. I'm not sure. But thanks for your Yvette Blackman. I don't know quite what to think about the eye roll emoji. We put our argument forward very well for Nella Darren, that in a way that nobody could possibly argue with it.
Not even Jean-Luc Picard face palm. Yep.
but at the same time, as we pointed out, Picard was so happy in that episode with Nella Darren, and it was making him do things where, like, people on the ship were seeing how happy he was. So, but yeah, I can see. I know that it kind of became a love fest for Nella Darren, but I'm not regretting that.
No, not.
That's just how I feel. Slightest.
And I think it's what Vera said. It was lovely to see. So it's a comfortable, it's going to give you warm, cozy feelings inside that Picard's happy.
Well, we have Michael Bentley who writes in and says, no one mentioned Picard's Nexus fantasy redhead. If he hadn't had such a strong sense of duty and compassion, he could have decided to stay with her forever. I agree with you all about Nella Darren, although I'm still a bit torn between her and Beverly. Well, thank you, Michael. Yeah, there was that little tiny bit in the Nexus, but yeah, he definitely had his duty that he needed to get back. So glad for that, because he would have been there forever and we wouldn't have had a movie.
I mean, maybe, but I don't think we see him having all that much of a connection with that woman in the Nexus. It's kind of like a really brief thing. So, and we've said before, it would...
Sorry, was that with the weird Victorian woman?
Yeah.
The Christmas.
Yeah. Okay. And we've said before, I think it would have been better if it was actually, you know, Beverly Crusher or something in the Nexus, but
or
oh well.
Somebody said his wife from the Inner Light.
Yeah. That would have been good too. Yeah. But yeah, Michael, that we weren't thinking about that because it is a pretty brief one. but yeah.
Too many to choose from as usual.
Well, for today, we are going to talk about, in continuing our series on Badass, and for this character, we are going to highlight Badass Guinan moments. I am going to ask first, before getting to our picks, like, how did you go about choosing? Because with Guinan, I felt it was very difficult because all of her moments, I just feel, are so badass. And they're not as many because she is just a guest character. So, Justin, how did you go about deciding which moments to choose?
Before I get into that, I just want to acknowledge we're doing this topic now because Whoopi Goldberg is going to be playing Guinan in season two of Picard. So it seemed very timely to look at this. It was kind of hard to choose. So what I actually did was Guinan was in 29 episodes of TNG and two movies, right? So I didn't have the time to watch all those episodes, but I've, you know, seen them a number of times. So I just kind of went to a site that has the scripts for the different episodes, and I went through all the appearances with and like searched for her lines and then just kind of thought about the different appearances. So I was just thinking about it in terms of, I mean, I think I've said before, when we talk about badass, it's usually defined as like tough and uncompromising. So I was looking for those Guinan moments where she was doing something that was difficult to do, or where there might be resistance, but she's doing it for, you know, the betterment of a person or for everyone. So that's kind of how I thought of it. I still came up with many more than three moments, which I haven't actually organized yet. So I'm going to see maybe what gets picked. And then from there, just kind of, because I feel like any of these moments could totally qualify. She has such strong moments, even though, you know, she was in 30 episodes or something like that. So that's kind of how I went about it.
Okay. Joe, how did you minimize your list of the many episodes that she was in?
Okay. So I really struggled with this. Now, I like the character of Guinan, but I don't necessarily think she's badass. So I think I've maybe taken kind of really loose, super loose definition of what badass is. I like what Justin said a minute ago about how she's doing something to help someone else or help the situation. I've kind of included that as being badass. And so I've maybe got like five or six choices. And I think most of them might be quite obvious choices. And it's it's about, they're all good. Everything that she's in is good because Whoopi Goldberg is such a good actress. But it's about what Guinan's doing as a character. And it's her, she looks like young, but she's hundreds of years old. So she's this old, kind of wise, sagey figure that knows more than, she's such an enigma. You don't really know what she's all about. So that's what's kind of intriguing about her.
Yeah, I went on to Memory Alpha and, you know, they had a nice timeline of her and there's really not much to her backstory. Like you said, she is an enigma. And the ones that I chose, I was like, oh, but this is so obvious. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to choose them and we'll see where the chips fall. And I'm glad to hear that you guys have multiple choices because I have my three and then I have one honorable mention. So and also, I had a little difficult time because of my love of Deanna Troi, where she is the ship's counselor, but yet
there Guinan was a particular moment that I didn't choose because of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know.
Guinan and Troi sometimes are at odds with me because I feel like, you know, those lines could have gone to Troi in some instances, but we definitely needed Guinan in the others. So, oh, I'm very excited to get going. Well, Joe, let's start with you.
Oh, no, me. Okay. So I'm going to start with an episode I think we maybe talk about every week. It like comes up increasingly on Earl Grey. I think if we went through all 317 episodes of Earl Grey and mapped out episode mentions, this would come up a lot, I'm sure. And that episode is The Measure of a Man, which is, I think, is really obvious. So there's a conversation Guinan has with Picard. Yes, it is Picard. I thought it was Riker for a moment. So I'm just going to relay the conversation as quickly as I can. Guinan says, "Do you mean his argument was that good?" Picard says, "Riker's presentation was devastating. He almost convinced me." Guinan, "You've got the harder argument. By his own admission, Data is a machine." Picard, "That's true." I'm going to jump ahead. Guinan then says, "Well, consider that in history of many worlds, there have always been disposable creatures. They do the dirty work. They do the work that no one else wants to do because it's too difficult or too hazardous. And an army of Data is all disposable. You don't have to think about their welfare. You don't have to think about how they feel. Whole generations of disposable people." And then Picard hits the nail on the head and says, "You're talking about slavery." Which is like, whoa, kind of mind-blowing. It's obvious. And it's kind of interesting that they get Guinan to have that conversation, being a black woman. I just really like that it's Guinan being a counsellor, isn't it? And not Troi. And she's given Picard little nuggets of her wisdom from her hundreds of years of experience.
Is it Guinan being a counsellor or is it Guinan helping him with his trial strategy?
Both. Is counselling him in his trial strategy, so I don't really see.
Okay.
It's providing counsel. Like, it could be legal counsel then, couldn't it?
Okay, his legal counselor. Yeah. It's a really great moment, Joe. It was definitely on my longer list, and I may have mentioned it in a previous Earl Grey, but that scene almost didn't happen, and it just so happened at the last minute that Whoopi Goldberg was available, so they wrote something for her. But it's really powerful and one of the most memorable things that happens in The Measure of a Man. And yeah, it's just her leading Picard to this conclusion of what's really going on and what's really at stake here. And I think it's badass just in like her, and we'll see this I think in some other moments, her ability to really like keep pushing on things until you break through to the real truth that needs to be said, you know.
I think she's really good at that. She leads people. Sorry, Amy. She knows where she wants people to go, and she leads them there. But you really want to listen to her. There's something about her. You're like drawn in, and you want to be where she wants you to be at.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And this was my number one pick as well. So thank you, Joe, for stealing it. It was interesting to think about that they had Guinan, and you mentioned, you know, her being a Black person, you know, giving this counsel to Picard, and thinking, well, there was LeVar Burton, Geordi, who could have definitely had this conversation with him. However, I think it would have been too on the nose with Geordi, since he had, you know, was known for playing in Roots,
yep,
you know.
Quinta Kinte.
And so I really like that they have Guinan doing this. And I feel that this is definitely a scene that wouldn't be a good Troy fit, in part because you get the wisdom that Guinan has through the years, you know. And I just feel that she, like you said, leads him in a way that is allows him to understand the true purpose, you know, and where it could lead. And I love this. I just really feel it's definitely badass that she allows Picard to get there on his own by pointing out, you know, some basic truths.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think also, I hadn't thought about it much before, but this is before we find that out, but it also relates to the experience of Guinan's people with the Borg, where basically they were disposable people and they were being kind of enslaved by the Borg. So there's that like other level that gets added once you see that episode later.
And I think it makes more sense because of her age as well, like you say, Amy, because she'll have seen slavery in action, like anywhere she's been, probably including Earth when she was alive and well, when Mark Twain and the U.S. slavery was a thing. So,
well, the time that she was there, it wasn't by that point, but we don't know how long she had been there, so she may have seen something like that.
When was she?
When she comes to Earth, it's 1893, and that's a couple decades after slavery's outlawed in the U.S.
Okay.
But still, there would be those kind of, you know, remnants of that oppression, and there were things going on in the South that was
Jim Crow laws.
Yeah. Kind of a substitute for slavery, except in name.
I think maybe even now. Yeah. Maybe. Not overt slavery, modern slavery is a thing.
There is slavery that happens in different parts of the world, for sure, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
It is still a problem. Yeah. Great pick.
Okay, Joe, good pick.
Sorry, Amy.
Good pick.
You can steal one of mine.
Well, I hope so. Well, Justin, let's get your first pick.
Well, you guys talk about a lot of obvious picks, and I probably have a lot of them on my list, but let's go with something that's less obvious that maybe isn't on your list.
Okay. Is this a time when Guinan time traveled back to Earth?
I can't believe you still haven't let go of that.
Never let go. It's my thing.
No.
Justin's favorite episode.
I love Time Zero, but no, Time Zero is not on my list. I did consider it, but it's not on my list. All right. So it actually comes from Hollow Pursuits, which of course we know is the first episode with Barclay, where he has his hollow addiction and all that stuff, right? But what I wanted to get at is a conversation between Guinan and LaForge. And I'll read some parts of that. I think it's when they're in 10 forward and, you know, LaForge is having all of these issues with Barclay, right? And Guinan says, "You engineering types don't appreciate imagination." And LaForge says, "That's not it, Guinan. He just doesn't fit in here." And Guinan says, "Turcum." "What?" "Reminds me of Turcum, my mother's brother. Sort of the family misfit. Everybody told me to stay away from him. Bad influence." "Did you? Are you kidding? He was the only member of the family who had a sense of humor. Except no one ever stayed around him long enough to realize it but me. My mother tells me I remind her of him, and I probably do. The idea of fitting in just repels me." "Maybe I'm not making myself clear, Guinan. Barclay, well, he's always late, the man's nervous, nobody wants to be around this guy." And Guinan says, "If I felt that nobody wanted to be around me, I'd probably be late and nervous too." "Guinan, that's not the point." "Are you sure? Excuse me." And she just walks away. And I think that is such an amazing scene because, you know, Barclay is having this difficulty and Guinan is getting to the heart of this issue. Like, the perception that you have of this guy is making him behave in this way where he's nervous and he's late and like maybe you just need to kind of look at this a different way, and not like he's an annoyance, but he's somebody that you want to try to understand and see how you can best work with him. So I think it, again, it's one of those moments where she's just like pushing against it. Like, let me tell you a story. And are you sure that's what's going on? And then that it's all his fault. So I love that moment and had to pick it.
That's really interesting.
That is a very good moment. And as you were talking about it, it just made me think about my students in the classroom and how there are certain students who will stand up and, you know, vouch for some misfits and, you know, some students who might not fit in exactly and sort of understand them. And that takes a lot of courage and badassery. I mean, it does, to stick up for those who aren't able to, you know, really defend themselves. And another layer to that is, you know, how are the kids feeling in my classroom? You know, do they want to come to class? You know, and their tardiness or their being absent might be, you know, a deeper layer as to what's going on, what's happening at school. I mean, it's definitely something that applies that we can take into her counsel for us and how we, you know, view who we just perceive as troublesome. Well, what really is the underlying cause of that?
Yeah. And I think it's a very Star Trek thing to say somebody is different, but let me try to understand them and find a way to work with them. But it's something that we're not seeing like a difficulty with this alien species have. We're seeing a member of Starfleet, a human being, treating another human being on the ship like they're different and they're an annoyance and they really don't want to work with them. So it's kind of saying, like, let's put our principles into practice right here on this ship. It doesn't have to be the case that there's some difference out there we have to deal with. It's right here. So I love that. And that's, I think that's one of the things that I like about Barclay as a character. I think that, you know, maybe for some fans, they have an issue like, how this guy get into Starfleet, or, you know, what's going on with this. But I think no matter what the organization or what the ideals or what the future, there will be different kinds of people. There will be people that are different and that we need to still understand. And that's what I really like seeing and examining. And Guinan understands that, I think, better than anybody else. She has a real facility for understanding the differences among people.
Yeah, I think what she allows him to do is just step back and reset. And when you were talking about it, I was thinking about something that happened just before we come on and started recording. So we've got a neighbour upstairs, I'm pointing up because he's directly above us, who, when he leaves the building, leaves the door open. And so just
the door to the building, yeah.
Yeah, so he just, it's just annoying because the window blow in and it'll bang the back door and we can hear it in the flat. And then for security reasons, it's just not good. So it's getting annoying. So we put a sign on the door, say, please close the door. And then there was a reply put on the note. But I'm not going to go into details. But I was like, okay, this could escalate. Of like, this tit for tat, back and forth, and not getting further away from a resolution. So like, the decision was to either phone his landlord and then escalate it, and that wouldn't serve any purpose. So I thought, I'm going to step back. I'm going to reset. I'm going to be diplomatic, and I'm going to just go and speak to him. Just have a human-to-human conversation. Do you know what? I stood outside his front door for like a minute. And now that way, you know, if you'd start to talk, he'll choke. Like, your voice will catch, and you're like... So I just calmed myself. It was some kind of Vulcan meditation that I was doing. And I felt my heart, but felt like it was going to beat out of my chest. It was like, boom, bitty, boom, bitty, boom, bitty, boom. And I calmed myself down and knocked the door. And he was perfectly lovely. And he's going to try his best to shut the door. So I came down and I was like, I felt zen. And I felt like I said to you, and I'm like, I'm an amazing diplomat. I should...
but like there's a real truth there, because sometimes something can happen where there's not really communication going on. Like you put like a sign on the door and the guy's annoyed, like, you know, and there's something annoying back and it could escalate, yeah. But you just went up and you're like, okay, can we just talk about something? And sometimes, you know, just face to face or talking can really, mm-hmm. you know, get things done where it's very reasonable and you're coming to their place where you can understand. And it's similar with LaForge, where he might like roll his eyes or be like, can you believe this guy? And let's avoid him. Or he could just come up and talk to him and be like, look, I know you've been having some issues. Let's talk about it. Let me see how I can help. And I think over the course of the episode, LaForge takes that to heart and really helps Barclay participate and save the day in the end. So yeah, I think what Guinan is doing here is really important in the episode. An important lesson for us. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, excellent.
All right. Well, so I'm going to give my first pick since my first
one
was taken.
Amy's going to steal one of mine. Watch this.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping that you don't have this one. And it's from Deja Q, where Guinan stabs Q with a fork. I love this in part because when you think about, you know, the torture that Q has put her through and her people through, and now Q is human. And it's with Q, Guinan, and Data. And Guinan says, "I hear they drummed you out of the continuum." And Q says, "I like to think of it as a significant career change. Just one of the boys, eh? One of the boys with an IQ of 2005. Data says, "The captain and many of the crew are not yet convinced he is truly human." Guinan, "Really?" She picks up a fork and stabs Q's hand and says, "Seems human enough to me." I just think, you know, I love that she's sort of getting back at him after years. I mean, we don't know how long of torture. And she's, again, in my opinion, just sort of standing up for all the torture and, you know, mishaps that Q has done with
Q had it coming,
other
right?
races. Yeah. And, you know, Guinan says, "Frightening one race after another, teasing them like frightened animals, and you enjoy every moment of your victim's fears." And so I think she's, again, just standing up for the little people. And I think that is very badass of her.
Amy, can I tell you something?
That was on my longer list. Go ahead.
I didn't have that.
Yes, Joe.
I didn't have it.
You didn't have that on your list?
That was not
what?
A steal.
Like, that was definitely one. I was probably going to put it in honorable mentions, but I think that's a great moment as I was looking through it because, yeah, she is. That's one of the things, and this will probably come up another pick. She's not really afraid of anybody, right? You've got this omnipotent being. Sure, he's not omnipotent now, but she's not afraid of him, and she's going to let him know what she thinks, even if he might be omnipotent sometime later. So that's what I really like about her. She's kind of fearless.
She is.
Yeah.
But she isn't even scared of Q when he's got his full powers. So it's like there's some unknown quantity about her that you could imagine her taking on Q and not losing.
We don't actually know what her powers are, what she can do, but
she does the whole thing. She does that, and I'm like, whoa, it's like the Q weirding way.
Exactly, yeah. And Q's like afraid of her, and it's like, wow, what power does she have that we just don't
maybe
know about?
We'll find out next year.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Oh, maybe.
Can you imagine
maybe,
being stabbed in the hand with a fork, though? It just sounds really painful.
That would really hurt.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a plastic fork, maybe not as much, but it looked like a metal fork.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would hurt a lot. Great pick.
And I also like that, you know, because Data's there and she sort of points out to Q, it's like, you know, you could learn a lot from Data about humanity, which, you know, because Data's an android. So I like that point too.
Data's more human than any of us put together.
Yes, agreed.
Okay. I'm not sure about that.
No,
statement.
It's not. It's, you would be wrong then. Just saying.
All right. Well, let's get to our second picks. Joe?
Me again. Okay. This is exciting. So I think I have to, so this is a really kind of frivolous pick. This one is, I was going to put an honorable mentions, but I like it. I think it's quite funny. And Guinan stops what is transpiring. And it's from Night Terrors and 10 Forward, where everybody's going a little bit stir crazy and think they've been held captive. And then Guinan pulls out that gargantuan phaser rifle from Megis 3 and puts on setting one. There's a big dial on the side and she turns it and puts on setting one and like shoots a hole in the ceiling. And she says that was only setting one. do you want to see what Sentu is like? And everything, the brawl that's about to break out, stops. So that's badass of her. She's like the bar woman or the bartender with a shotgun and an old Western. Except it's a phaser rifle from Magus 3.
That was definitely on my longer list, Joe. And I think the only time you see... Well, that's not true. There's actually another one where she does have a weapon. But, I mean, it's rare that you see her with a weapon. But it is really great because everybody's just kind of going insane. And she's like, all right, guys, stop.
Yeah,
settle down. This has got to stop.
This is my bar.
This can't happen in my bar. Yeah, exactly. That's a great moment.
Yeah, that is a great pick. I actually had forgotten about that. So, kudos. All right, Justin?
Well, let's see. I need to decide what I'm going to do here because you guys still said you had some obvious picks, right?
I have a very obvious one.
So, and I need to think about what that obvious one is because I want a different obvious one, maybe. So let me see if I can pick something that's maybe not as obvious. And it comes from the episode Redemption. And this is the scene where Worf and Guinan are in the phaser range. And... you know, Worf is, I think, doing some target practice, and Guinan comes in. And he's like, Guinan? And Guinan says, it's a little quiet down at 10 forward, so I thought I'd get off a little target practice. Do you mind if I join you? You practice? I like to keep my eye sharp. I practice at level 14. Guess I could come down to that level for a while. Begin program. And, you know, she kind of hits her first target before Worf even realizes what's going on. And Guinan says, you know, I had a bet with the captain I could make you laugh before you became lieutenant commander. Not a good bet today. I've seen you laugh. I like it. Klingons do not laugh. And then he misses. Guinan says, oh, yes, they do. Absolutely, they do. You don't. But I've heard some Klingon belly laughs that would curl your hair. And Guinan gets a couple of hits. Worf gets a couple of hits and a miss. Guinan says, your son laughs. He's a Klingon. He's a child and part human. That's right. And you're not. You're full Klingon, except you don't laugh. I do not laugh because I do not feel like laughing. Other Klingons feel like laughing. What does that say about you? Perhaps it says, I do not feel like other Klingons. And then he misses again. And the conversation kind of goes on a little bit from there, where she's talking about him having difficulty, you know, that his son's having difficulty adjusting to life on Earth and like all this stuff, right? And then Worf says it won't be easy for him. And Guinan says, no, it won't. But at some point, he's going to want to know what it's like to really be a Klingon, just as you're learning. So I think there's a couple of things going there. First of all, she's intimidating Worf, right? Like he keeps missing, right? And he's just kind of like rattled and intimidated by her, which is a hard thing to intimidate Worf. But also like in this scene, she's kind of getting to the heart of the matter of what is bothering him. And she's kind of like in a way almost questioning that he's really as Klingon as he thinks he is, right? Which I think is a valid criticism, and he's learned how to be a Klingon a lot from, you know, what he's read or what he's seen, but he didn't grow up on the homeworld or whatever. So just like, again, her pushing against it and saying like, are you sure that you're really as Klingon as you think you are? I think you're actually learning what it is to be a Klingon. I think that's just a very bold thing to do and to kind of show him up at the phaser range at the same time. So I think there's something really great and badass in like that whole exchange. And I think when I first saw the episode, it was totally like unexpected, like, oh, Guinan in the phaser range and she's challenging Worf. And so anyway, I really love that scene. What do you guys think?
I think you learn lots about Guinan here, but she only gives you like a snippet. She doesn't tell the full story. No. Like coming back
down. It's more about trying to learn about Worf than her, right?
Yes. But in terms of like coming back down to like level 14 or whatever it was, she's
yeah,
it's like those little details where she tells you everything but nothing at the same time, and it's her ability mm-hmm. in terms of dealing with anybody that she's dealing with, Worf in this case, that she sees the solution to things way before anybody else, and she just insightfully gets to the heart of the matter and mm-hmm. and leads them there. I've never realized this before.
I love that scene as well. And I always laugh when she's like, you know, Klingons laugh and, you know, I've heard big belly and I can just hear, you know, the Klingons that we've seen, you know, laughing. And I just absolutely love that she's pointing out to Worf, like, you know, there's maybe something wrong with your perception of what a Klingon is, yeah. You know?
And this is a couple seasons after A Matter of Honor where we see a ship full of Klingons that laugh yep. and have a great time when Riker's there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's what I always think of. I'm like, yeah, no, Riker and, you know, they were getting big laughs. And so I think, like you said, Joe, it just gets down to the heart of the matter. And she does it so expertly. I love that. Mm-hmm. Great pick.
Thank you. Yeah, it just really stood out to me.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to choose a very obvious one. And this is where Guinan is counseling Riker in Best of Both Worlds at the beginning of part two. And
Amy,
Guinan,
Amy.
Oh, why did you, darn, why did I steal one of yours, one, Joe?
Okay. I owed you.
It's on my list, too. I owed you one. It's a great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Guinan just walks into the captain's ready room. And, you know, Riker's a little surprised and, you know, she starts, I've heard a lot of people talking down in 10 forward. They expect to be dead in the next day or so. They trust you. They like you, but they don't believe anyone can save them. Riker, I'm not sure anyone can. When a man is convinced he's going to die tomorrow, he'll probably find a way to make it happen. The only one who can turn around is you. Riker, I'll do the best I can. You're going to have to do something you don't want to do. You have to let go of Picard. Maybe you haven't heard. I tried to kill him yesterday. You tried to kill whatever that is on the Borg ship, not Picard. Picard is still here with us in this room. If he had died, it would have been easier. But he didn't. They took him from us, a piece at a time. Did he ever tell you why we're so close? No. Well then, let me just say our relationship is beyond friendship. Beyond family, and I will let him go, and you must do the same. There can only be one captain. It's not that simple. This was his crew. He wrote the book on the ship, and the Borg know everything he knows. It's time to throw that book away. You must let him go, Riker. It's the only way to beat him, the only way to save him, and that is now your chair, Captain. I love this exchange. You know, just sort of talking to Riker, telling the truth, saying, you know, get your butt in gear. And again, also, she's sort of in, again, her wisdom that I think comes through here of how to let someone go, which is very, very difficult, especially when you love them so deeply. And so she's, you know, kicking Riker's butt into gear, teaching him how to let go, teaching him how to be a better captain. Like, that is so badass on all the layers that she does in this yeah. one little scene.
It's go ahead.
There she goes again with the little snippets of information that tell you everything, nothing at the same time. We're more than friends. We're more than family. Is that, or goes yeah. deeper than that? But what does that mean? I don't know. Tell me.
I think you get a snippet of what that means in Time's Arrow, but yes, not the whole thing.
But not the full story.
Yeah.
There's a deeper connection there.
It's true. She gives little bits about herself, but it's really focused on the wisdom. And Amy, this is such an amazing scene. I mean, it may be one of the very best in like this, all of her appearances, partly because here she is. She is somebody who is a bartender, who's there because she's known Picard for a while. She's not in Starfleet, right? But she has this special relationship. Picard is gone. Riker tried to kill him, right? Now he's part of the Borg. And Guinan has the boldness to go into Riker, the captain of the ship, and she's not even in Starfleet or anything, and say, whatever you know, throw it away. I mean, that's like such a bold thing. I mean, it's absolutely the right way to go because you need to do something that he won't expect. But that's a really bold thing to walk into the ready room and tell the captain to do that. But I've always loved that line, throw that book away. Because, you know, there are some times, I think, in our lives where things are going along a certain way and it's not working. And we need to throw the book away for what we think we know about our lives or where we're going and do something completely different, right? So I think there's something very inspirational about it too. And it's inspirational for Riker too, because I think before that scene, he's just kind of like talking to the empty chair, like, what would you do, Captain? So like the ghost of Picard is like still around and haunting him. And Guinan's like, I'm sorry, I know you love him, but push that away, push away all the strategy, just clear it all away. You need to focus on what's important to save this crew. It's just, it's perfect. I mean, it's one of the best scenes in Star Trek, I think. It's so good.
Can I make a prediction?
Well, and another, oh, go ahead.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Yes.
And this may seem a little bit far-fetched, but I think
okay.
when Picard eventually dies in the season finale of Picard season 4 and goes to like the afterlife,
predictions.
We find that the person that organizes the afterlife is actually Guinan, and Guinan says to him, yeah, sometimes I come down to the your level of existence.
I come down to level 14 of existence.
Yes. And sometimes I just walk amongst you guys. And I was intrigued by you, so I followed you around for a bit.
And first, I don't accept the premise of this, that Picard's ever going to die. But...
Yeah, I know, it's going to be tough for all of us, but hey, he can only live so long. So yeah. God is a woman, and a black woman at that. I said it here first.
Yeah.
I sort of like to think in yesterday's Enterprise, where we see Riker and he's all mangled and they're still fighting the Borg and stuff. It's like that would have been the timeline had Riker not thrown out the book and followed Guinan's counsel.
Hmm. That could be.
What episode is that?
That's in
yesterday's
no,
Enterprise.
No, that's Parallels.
Parallels. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, yeah. Parallels. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, I could see that. Yeah. Giant beard Borger everywhere Riker.
Yes.
Oh no,
yeah.
because
Locutus is still there.
No, that's because the Riker from that parallel universe didn't get that advice from Guinan because
yeah,
when she
didn't listen to
it. No, he didn't get the advice because when she used the phaser rifle from Magus 3 and shot the ceiling, a ceiling panel fell down and killed her.
Oh my gosh. Joe's back to killing our characters.
Very dark.
It was like it was an accident. I didn't do it. She did it herself.
Guinan is smarter than to kill herself with a falling ceiling panel. Mm.
Exactly.
How did she know that? Maybe a plasma conduit above that ceiling panel? Blown up the ship?
She's looked up all the schematics. She knows.
And she's God now, so she knows where to fire.
Okay. Something like that.
I'm on fire today.
Something
nobody
like
agreed because we'll say yes you are Joe.
I did. All right, well Joe, let's get to your third and final pick.
Me again?
Yes.
This is going way too fast. I protest.
Round robin.
Okay, I would like to do the episode before The Best of Both Worlds Part 2, which is The Best of Both Worlds Part 1. Not a lot of people know that. So, again, it's a conversation between Guinan and the captain, but in this case it's Picard because he's not been assimilated yet. And there's less of Guinan seeing a solution to a problem and leading Picard to that solution, and more of a leading Picard to, if the worst case scenario happens, then accept it. Humanity will survive. Okay. So she's talking about when the Borg destroyed her homeworld, her people were scattered throughout the universe, and they survived, as humanity will survive. As long as there's a handful of you to keep the spirit alive, you will prevail, even if it takes a millennium. There is the extent of her wisdom there. Even if the Borg assimilate Earth and assimilate the Federation, there has to be something that will survive of the species.
Tell me more about that, why that's badass for her to have this conversation.
Okay, and it's just her imparting her wisdom, isn't it? I think.
Of how to survive.
Yeah, that her species survived and the homeworld was destroyed and only a handful of them survived. So we've got this experience and it is possible. So don't, I know that the odds are insurmountable here, but humanity will survive, even though it's going to be grim and you're going to lose a lot of people potentially, but you can do it. Like, she has faith in Picard and in humanity to go forward and into the future.
So an inspiring message in a dark time.
Thanks. As inspiring as it can be.
Well, and I think if you couple that with I, Borg, And you know that history with the Borg and her people and her complete hatred of the Borg, and then having to face Hugh and having that sort of turnaround where she actually does see some humanity in Hugh after talking to him, makes that scene in I, Borg even more powerful because of this, you know, like you said, in season three, you know, where she is explaining and what the Borg did to her people. I think it is a really nice, badass moment there if you pair that with the I, Borg. So I sort of snuck one in there.
Yeah, you did.
You're allowed. You're a host.
Okay, Justin, on to your third and final pick. What you got for us?
Yeah, well, I just want to say a couple that were on my list that we'd already talked about. We talked about Q-Hu and her, you know, confronting with Q and not being afraid of him. And you talked about the conversation in I, Borg where she really turns things around, which is great. But so the one that I'm going to pick for my third pick is from Yesterday's Enterprise.
Nice.
On your list, maybe not.
It was an honorable mention. So
honorable
good.
Mention. But yep. But like it was actually one of the first ones that I thought about because and I'll read some of the conversation because I think this is a very she's again pushing and this is a very difficult thing and she's pushing against an alternate timeline Picard, right? So Picard is talking to her and you know she's saying like they need to send the ship back. I think something's happening and Picard says I need more. And Guinan says, there is no more. I wish there were. I wish I could prove it, but I can't. Then I can't ask them to go back. You've got to. Guinan, they will die moments after they return. How can I ask them to sacrifice themselves based solely on your intuition? I don't know. But I do know that this is a mistake. Every fiber in my being says, this is a mistake. I can't explain it to myself, so I can't explain it to you. I only know that I'm right. Who is to say that this history is any less proper than the other? I suppose I am. Not good enough, damn it. Not good enough. I will not ask them to die. 40 billion people have already died. This war is not supposed to be happening. You've got to send those people back to correct this. And what's to guarantee that if they go back, they will succeed? Every instinct tells me this is wrong. It is dangerous. It is futile. And Guinan says, we've known each other a long time. You have known me. You've never known me to impose myself on anyone or take a stance based on trivial or whimsical perceptions. This timeline must not be allowed to continue. Now, I've told you what you must do. You have only your trust in me to help you decide to do it. I just love like this whole scene because, you know, this is an alternate timeline, but Guinan and Picard here also have this long relationship. And Guinan is just going to keep pushing, even though she doesn't really have a shred of evidence except her own feeling that this is wrong and the ship needs to be sent back. And so she keeps pushing against Picard and he's pushing back like, how can I do that? They're going to die. Like, how do you know this isn't any better than anything else? And she's just like, with the force of her conviction, she knows within her that this is wrong and things need to be changed because incredibly 40 billion people have died in this war. It's horrific. And she feels like there's something better. So this was actually one of the first ones that came to mind because she's in this situation where she doesn't really have anything to back it up except her own feeling, but her own feeling is so strong. She's going to keep arguing for it, even though it's a very difficult situation to send people to almost certain death. So I think it's, for me, it's, you know, right up there with the Best of Both Worlds part two moment, Amy, as her best moment in doing what no one else can, really. She's the only person there that can do that. And so she has a big responsibility.
And again, she does that whole thing where she's telling you something without telling you anything. Like we're getting little bits of information about who Guinan is. It's like, why would she have this kind of extrasensory perception to know that something's changed, but not be able to put her finger on it? She adds layers to the enigma that is Guinan. She's really annoying for that.
I think she's really amazing.
She is.
That.
No, that's what I mean. Like, I'm getting annoyed because I've got all these little half bits of information and I'm no further forward.
No, I think that is truly badass where you can trust your intuition and make recommendations based off of it. And yeah, you don't have any facts, you don't have any evidence, but you know that you're right. Like that, there's so many times when sometimes I just wish I would trust my intuition that I know this is the right thing to do and I'm hum-hawing and I just can't figure out what to do. But like she is so bold and you know, makes her point of, you just have to trust me. And I love that she gets it off her chest. Like, I've told you, now you get to make the decision. And I love that she's providing Picard with the information, all the information that she has, so that he can make the best choice. And I think that is amazing.
So I have a question that I haven't really thought about much before. When you see Guinan in this alternate timeline, is it actually an alternate timeline Guinan, or is it the prime timeline Guinan that has somehow been stuck into this situation and that's how she knows that it's wrong somehow?
I've always thought that it's an alternate timeline who knows something is up.
Just like all of a sudden she knows something up, even though she's been living in that reality for hundreds of years?
But you think about the crew, like that Picard is the prime timeline. And so in my opinion, I think that she sees them differently than what her.
But if she is the alternate timeline Guinan, she shouldn't see them as any different. This is the reality she's been living in all along. Right? To me, it makes more sense that somehow through some weird thing, she has some power that she's transported over there instead of whatever Guinan was there, and she all of a sudden feels like this is wrong. Because it feels weird if they've been living through this. Well, it's because the ships arrived, isn't it? Maybe it does make sense. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it's a weird thought.
But it goes to, like, what are her true powers, you know?
Mm-hmm. You don't know.
It is this case. Yeah.
Omnipotent.
Because
as far
I think
know.
It sort of couples with one of my honorable mentions, I'm just going to sneak in, with when she's in the Nexus and like how she can tell the difference between that, you know? So that's true. Sort of put it, lump it in that category, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. But anyway, great moment and a great episode.
I tend not to try and think about these temporal causality loops, but I really like the way that's portrayed in Avengers Endgame, where the Hulk goes back to get the Time Stone. Have you guys seen Endgame Avengers movies?
Nope. No. I've not seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So the Hulk goes back in time to 2012 to get the Time Stone from the Sorceress Supreme. Mind the bald woman.
Okay.
And she uses...
Are you sure you've seen this, Amy?
I mean, she draws, they're in New York on the top of this building, and she uses her powers to draw like the prime timeline through space. And then she says, if you take the Time Stone forward to the future, then that will destabilize our power to hold back the evil that's trying to get to Earth. So another timeline will branch off, and all hell will break loose out on Earth. So imagine, like, every decision that is made, it branches off to a new timeline. So as to the question, which Guinan is it? I've always seen it as, like, Guinan, it's prime timeline, but accidentally all the events were, like, changed in the past. So it's prime timeline, but the events were changed in the past, so it changed prime timeline, the events of the prime timeline.
Or maybe Guinan has such special powers that she is actually shielded from any temporal changes. Or alternate timeline changes.
Is there a wee thing on her belt that she switches on?
It's inside her hat.
Oh, wow, that's why they're so big.
Yeah. That's it.
So the device is actually really small, but the power supply for it is really large. Oh, no, Joe, that is.
That is Guinan's secret.
It's in the brim of her hat. It's like a particle accelerator. She accelerates like protons really fast until they collide and produces energy for her chronoton field. Mm-hmm.
We have solved the mystery of Guinan's hat, yes.
And she's actually an agent in the Department of Temporal Investigations, right?
Would not surprise me.
Sure. We've solved it. We don't need to talk about anything else. We've solved that mystery that's been going on for decades.
Excellent. Okay, so for my third and final pick, I think this is going to surprise you because I'm choosing her interaction with one of my least favorite characters.
With one of your least favorite characters. I think I know where you're going, Amy.
Yes,
and I think it's something that we talked about the first time I was a guest on this show. But go ahead.
I think so.
I don't know this.
So, Justin, help me out with the episode. It's where they get shrunken to...
Rascals. You're talking about something different than I thought you were talking about. Rascals. Okay, that's still with Ro, but Rascals.
Yes,
okay.
It is still with Ro. but what I love is the interaction that she has with Ro. And again, her wisdom and understanding how important it is to be a child and to have that. And I love that she's explaining to Ro, well, let's jump on the bed, you know, at the end, and we can still be, you know, children a little bit longer, because it's never too late to experience childhood and the youth and the innocence that being a child is, and knowing that Ro did not have that. And that breaks my heart, truly, you know, being a teacher and seeing kids who don't get to experience a real childhood because of situations that their parents put them in. And that really breaks my heart. And I love that idea of it's never too late to be a child and to have that experience at any time. So I think that is truly badass that she is relaying her wisdom to Ro. And you know, when they are jumping on the bed, you can just see the pure joy and the release that Ro has of letting go of everything and just enjoying that moment. I love that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know Rascals is far from everybody's favorite episode, but I love it. I think it's a fun episode. But the Guinan-Ro interaction is actually very moving. It's like Ro really didn't have a much of a childhood because of what the Cardassians did to the Bajorans. And she's trying to loosen her up and have fun. But then at the end, there's this really great scene where, you know, Guinan is back to her, you know, adult size, but Ro is like drawing and she doesn't want it to end. She wants to continue to have what's there with her childhood. And Guinan understands that and says, you know, it'll be there when you want. And she, like, you know, I think helps her draw or whatever. It's like so moving and such like a bizarre, fun episode. But like it's a great interaction. It's actually one I hadn't put on my list because I wasn't quite sure about it. But I think it is really great. And what she's doing is something that's difficult to do, and there's some heavy stuff in Ro's background. Yeah,
that's a really good pick, and I've never really noticed it before. I suppose it's because it's not the characters we're used to; it's their childhood versions.
Although it is actually the same characters, they're just in a different size.
Yeah,
like, but I think all their mental abilities,
like visually,
are the same.
Do you know what I mean? They're different, portrayed by different actors. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It never occurred to me to pick Rascals as an episode, but you're right. I think Guinan just embraces being a child again. And she was a child hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And there's a line that Ro says, where they're jumping on the bed. She's like, this is ridiculous. As if, why we're adults? Why are we behaving in such a kind of stupid fashion? So, yeah, she just brings out that joy and recaptures what it is to be a child. It's a really powerful moment. I like it. Well done, Amy.
Yeah. Great choice, Amy. Yeah.
Yay. All right. Well, for time's sake, let's just do one honorable mention.
Yep.
All right, Joe?
I have 17. No, I'm kidding. On.
Oh, dear.
No, pick number one of 17.
I actually only have one, I think. Yeah, I only have one. So I really want to mention Time's Arrow.
Okay.
And it's for a similar reason to, I think, what Justin said about yesterday's Enterprise. What Guinan knew something was wrong and couldn't quite put her finger on it. She says to Picard that you have to go down as part of the away team as well.
No, she knows exactly what's going on because she lived it 500 years ago.
Mm, yeah, true.
She just can't reveal it to him because they haven't technically... The
again,
guy in the past hasn't met Picard before.
It's that kind of temporal paradox thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's kind of like in 1893, Guinan has never met Picard. But then whenever Picard first meets Guinan, like she's already met him, but he's meeting her for the first time. And when she meets him for the first time, it's her umpteenth time.
So when Guinan comes on the Enterprise first,
she first met him 500 years before.
But does she know that?
Almost 500. Yeah. She knows that. But Picard doesn't know about that previous history in the 19th century until later. Yet.
Oh, yes.
Right. I know it's confusing.
Yeah. I know.
So I suppose that just speaks to her longevity, doesn't it, really?
And her ability to keep secrets. Because I think, you know, we see her first in the second season of TNG, but I think, I don't know if it's even said on screen, but there's definitely a suggestion they've known each other for a while since the Stargazer days or whatever, which they've gone into in some comics and books, but we've never really seen that on screen. So they've actually known each other for a while. From Picard's perspective, from Guinan's perspective, it's even longer than that.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Then talking about books, are there any good Guinan books, Justin, that you could recommend?
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I feel, I'm trying to think if, I think that does have Guinan in it. All right. So Joe, there actually is, there may be more, but there's actually a really good Peter David novel called Vendetta, which is about the Borg and Guinan. And you find out a little bit more about, I think that her sister is in that book. So it's very good. So that is one that has Guinan in quite a bit of it.
I think that's a backstory that I need to know, given the fact that she's annoyed me with snippets of information that tell me nothing.
But I don't know if in any of the novels you actually get to see Guinan from like hundreds of years before, or like what happened with the Elorians and the Borg or anything. I don't think so, but I haven't read everything, so I could be wrong.
That would be a good book for someone to write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe it has been written and I don't know about it, but But that's a good one. Vendetta. You should check it out.
Good. All right, Justin, honorable mention.
Yes. So it's good that you mentioned Rascals, because I have an honorable mention from the episode Ensign Ro, where we first see Ro and Guinan. And, you know, I know you don't like Ro as much, but Ro's one of my favorite characters. And I love what Guinan kind of does for Ro in that episode. And I could go over a couple of different scenes, but basically, you know, Ro is intent forward and drinking and by herself, and Guinan talks to her even though she doesn't want to. There's something I like about that, but what I like more is the part later where Ro had come to her, to Guinan, and said, like, there's all this stuff going on, and she's like, you need to see Picard, like, I trust him. And then Guinan kind of comes to Picard's ready room with Ro, like, right behind her. And Guinan says, Ensign Ro has some things she'd like to talk to you about. And Picard says, Ensign Ro has been confined to her quarters. So again, Guinan being bold and just taking people into the ready room or coming in. And Guinan says, well, she can go back to her quarters when she's done. And Picard says, Guinan, I don't know why you're involved in this, but... And then Guinan just says, she's my friend, and leaves. And then after that, Picard says, please sit down. Guinan is very selective about whom she calls a friend. So in this situation where there's somebody who's like been in disgrace, lots of people don't want Ro on the ship, right? But Guinan knows there's this important information, and she's going to use her influence to be like, look, this is my friend. You need to listen. Goodbye. Like, I don't even need to be here. You just need to listen. There's just something that's so great, I think, about her boldness to like break through like any intimidation there might be about seeing the captain or, you know, challenging their friendship or whatever. So I love that scene there in Ensign Ro. So that's my honorable mention.
That's a really good pick. I like that. I'm not a huge fan of Ensign Ro, but I think
so sad.
I know, but I think it's just because I much prefer Kira from Deep Space Nine.
Okay, I will say I love Kira. Kira is my favorite character in Star Trek, so I'm with you on that. And I, as much as I love Ro, I'm okay that Michelle Forbes, who plays Ro, turned down being the first officer in Deep Space Nine, and that's afterwards they created Kira. But yeah, I do like Kira even more.
Mm.
I will say that.
I think Nana Visitor is just an amazing woman. I really like her, like in person.
Yeah.
Like there's something about her.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and the character arc that Kira gets in DS9 is pretty amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So,
one of the strongest. On both, because, yeah, seeing Anand, the cruise, just a good person. Oh my gosh. So good. And then, yeah, I like Kira. She's my favorite on Deep Space Nine.
Yay.
So. All right. So I know we already talked about Generations, but I love Guinan's interaction. Again, sort of explaining what the Nexus is. And I just love that she was there, was ripped away, and understands Soren's desire to get back. And her ability to curb her desire to get back, that she's not willing to destroy a star and, you know, millions of people and planets just to get back to the Nexus, like, because they were in the same situation, but she has the badassery to not, you know, make decisions like Soren did, and then have that continual living her life without getting back to the Nexus and knowing what that's like. I think that really shows great character, that, you know, that she's able to live where she is now, live in the moment. And I think we see that, you know, through this episode where we talked about her moments. So I just am going to throw that out.
No, it's a really good pick. Yeah. And I had thought about Guinan and Generations, but it didn't quite make my list. But it's great that she's there, but I think we needed more. I'm glad that we're going to get more in Picard season two, because, like, it feels like in a certain way, like, Guinan was in all these episodes and we learned things, but we haven't really gotten anywhere near the end of her character arc, I think. So I'm glad we'll get more. Because in Nemesis, like, yeah, she was at the wedding, but, like, you don't really learn anything about her in Nemesis, do you? So, yeah. So that'll be good.
Is Guinan, like, just talking about Guinan, is she not a bit like Picard's kind of spirit animal? Do you know what I mean? Like, she's always there, and she's not just for Picard, but for everybody, and she, I'm convinced there's something supernatural about her. Maybe not supernatural.
Yeah. I think she must be... It's weird how she seems to make Q afraid, and Q is like this omnipotent being. So is it like she actually was part of some other collective of omnipotent beings that's a rival to the Q continuum? I don't know. There's something there that we're not aware of. Yeah. I don't know.
Amazing.
Well, let's get to our final thoughts. This has been a great discussion. So Joe, give us your final thoughts.
I'm like totally confused about Guinan now after talking about it. I'm like convinced that there's more. We already knew there was way more to her than met the eye. But just talking about it and these common themes that come out about her being like a scalpel for the psyche. She gets to the heart of the matter. And yeah, I know I coined the term scalpel for the psyche. Yeah, so incisive, so insightful. And I still don't know anything. I'm entirely confused. But great discussion. And she's the leader of the afterlife, whatever that may shape or form that may take. No, I've got it. She basically confides in Picard on his deathbed and guides him into like ascendancy, into her realm of existence. Oh, it's totally happening now.
Joe, if this actually happens, I don't know. I'll send
Nobel
you a plane
prize.
Load of Jaffa cakes.
Oh yes,
a plane load of Jaffa cakes.
Oh, any? Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, just like in Transfigurations, he'd be like, and he'll do that.
Picard doesn't die. He just becomes an energy being exploring the universe
on a different plane of existence.
And he can have adventures with Wesley.
Oh. that's going to be a new TV show. We'll have the Pike series. We'll have Section 31. We'll have Discovery. We'll have Picard. We'll have those animated ones whose name I forget. And we'll also have Picard and his amazing adventures with Wesley Crusher.
Yeah, the Traveler Chronicles. Yeah. We're both travelers. Yeah. Wow, that's gone way... Okay, interesting.
Way nuts.
We'll see. That probably won't happen, Joe.
Mm. Stranger Things.
All right, Justin, your final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Guinan's always been one of my favorite characters in Star Trek, and it's great to just focus on her for one episode, because it was great also, you know, to kind of quickly go through all of her appearances, because there's a lot of variety, right? There's some other things that are great moments, but not as badass. But there's a bunch of things here where Guinan is fearless. She's pushing against boundaries. She is getting people to realize things no one else could. I think she's just a very special character in that way. And she's very bold in what she does, but I don't think she does it in an arrogant way like Q does. She just does it with a lot of wisdom and wants to help people, right? And her motives and intentions, I think, are always good. So that's what I love about the character. So just to reflect on it was just really great, you know, because I love this character and this is the opportunity to really reflect on it. And then we can think about it as we go toward, you know, seeing Guinan again in season 2 of Picard, which I'm just incredibly excited about. I think I don't even know what that'll mean, but I'm really happy to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, like you both said, we don't really know much about her. We get these little nuggets and then we don't know anything more. And she has amazing character, like you said, Justin. I love the fact that as we went through this discussion, we really saw that she was sticking up for the little guy in almost every pick. I mean, I think that wisdom comes from her age and recognizing everyone. And everyone is important. And when you know, are coming at it with a different perspective, like Geordi was in Barclay, and no, we need to get to the root of it. What is the real problem? I love that she is willing to do that. And her tenacious ability to just live in the moment, like yesterday's Enterprise or with Ro, like definitely, again, you get that from wisdom. I think you get that from age and you get that through experience. And so recognizing those things and then applying them to our lives, I think we could all, if we were all a little bit more like Guinan, the world would be a better place for sure.
But nobody would know anything about anybody.
You know, Guinan's very private. Maybe everybody would be very private about their lives and their origins, you know.
All right. Well, listeners, I'm going to turn the time over to Justin, who has an announcement for us.
Yes, I'll just get right to it. So listeners, this was a very difficult decision to come to, but as of this episode, I'm leaving Earl Grey. Has absolutely nothing to do with Amy or Joe or the show itself. I've loved being... No.
Thought it was my sense of humor. Absolutely...
No, I've absolutely loved being on this show. I've been on here for over 125 episodes over the last 2.5 years. I just had to come to this decision because my work was getting busier and busier, and I was finding it harder and harder to devote the time that I wanted to this show, to Earl Grey. So it's something that, I'm sad that it's necessary, but it was just getting way too crazy and my work's getting even busier. So, that said, you know, I do another podcast on Trek FM, The Line, which is our Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm going to continue doing that because once Picard finishes airing in a couple of weeks, that will be a lot less frequent and that'll work better in my schedule. But, this show, Earl Grey, has been very special to me. It's changed my life because I've gotten into podcasting really because of this show and connected with so many amazing people and had so many incredible discussions. And we've kind of dived so deep into the next generation. It's caused me to love and appreciate it even more. At the same time, when I've talked about it for over 125 episodes, I feel like I've kind of said what I need to about the different characters and episodes on the next generation. So, As of this one, this is my last Earl Grey. Maybe I'll come back in the future and guest if time allows. But thank you guys so much for like everything that you've done and being such amazing co-hosts. And I just want to thank, you know, everybody that's been on this show, Darren and Philip and Daniel that helped us start the show back in 2013 and had so many amazing episodes and were so inspirational. Richard, who I got to podcast with for a long time on this show, and Lee, who I got to podcast with a few times. And of course, you know, Amy, you've been here with me since I started on this show all that time ago and even before then. And Joe, it's been just incredible podcasting with you and getting to know you better. You guys are really great friends, and it's sad, but sometimes, you know, all good things come to an end, right?
Oh, you had to finish it there, didn't you?
Oh, God. Sorry.
Justin, damn you.
So.
Thanks, Justin.
Amy is crying. I'm sorry, guys. I'm really sorry. If I had another choice, I would definitely keep going, but it would just becoming way too crazy to keep up with everything in my life, especially the work stuff that I'm doing. So.
And see the whole thing that I posted on the Babel conference about accidentally pulling your hair at STLV to sample your DNA and grow clones. It was true.
Yeah.
The first batch is ready.
Oh, I see. So my clone is returning as a co-host next week?
Yeah. They'll be like, no, that's seamless. Yeah.
So why did I even say this whole thing then?
I don't know.
Maybe people wouldn't have even noticed, right? Well, maybe they would notice. Your cloning may be imperfect, but...
I just wanted to see Amy ugly crying again. No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm trying to...
Are you okay, Amy?
Amy's indisposed. But yeah, like you
doing
said,
this with you Amy, has meant a lot.
Always come back as a guest. Obviously, we'll have to, we'll be in charge and we'll have to vet you and things like that.
Yeah, you'll have to gatekeep. But
if
also,
you say too much,
like,
we'll edit you out and things, you know. So.
Yeah. But also, Amy, and I think this would go to Richard too, thank you for giving me the opportunity, right? And to Lee as well, because I think when I became an associate producer of this show and started listening to Earl Grey, as soon as that happened, I was like, hey guys, can I guest on the show? And I was like, probably way too persistent, but I got to guest for a few episodes and then Lee had to leave and I could come on the show. So thank you for giving me a chance and not just like pushing me off because I was sending you guys too many messages. Like, when can I guest next? When can I guest next? So,
let me get this straight. Just, Amy's responsible for your podcasting career as well.
I would say so. Oh, yes.
Okay. Me too.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
She does that.
You're an inspiration, Amy. And you know, I don't think we even acknowledged it. By this point, Amy, you have been on more episodes of Earl Grey than anyone else. So I think it's 160 episodes.
She's that old.
Something like that.
That's true.
I'm Guinan.
You're 600 years old. Yeah.
You don't look Amy.
Yeah, I just... and. Yeah.
Thank you.
And listeners, just thank you so much for, you know, listening to me talk for so many hours over the last 2.5 years. Really... really appreciate it. It's been a very special experience. Yeah.
And as a special podcast shortly, I'm going to edit everything that Justin's ever said together as one super long podcast, and I'll make it available.
Yeah, and you'll finish it when you're 300 years old.
Exactly,
that'll be a really long podcast.
Like,
yeah.
2 weeks long.
Oh.
Okay, I think I've gained my composure. Sorry, listeners. No, I haven't. Yeah, Justin, we will definitely miss you. You have been my longest co-host here on Earl Grey. You have brought so much to Earl Grey, and it's been one of the reasons why I've enjoyed podcasting so much. With all of your hard work and your great insights and all of your references to the many, many books that you've read and puts me to shame.
That's right. There's books.
I love
there's
your
books,
Trek story.
There's books. I remember
yeah,
this.
There's yes. books. Yeah.
Somebody going and, forward has to mention books.
It's just truly been an honor. And then meeting you at STLV and hanging out with you and meeting your dear, lovely wife, Rosie, truly... you guys have changed my life, and I know that we will continue to be friends and, you know, talk through social media, but I'm definitely going to miss podcasting with you each and every week.
It means a lot to me, yeah.
It's like what Data says about somebody that dies. I can't actually remember the episode or who it is. It's about your neurons and your synapses and your memory gets used to their existence. And not,
become accustomed
not that
to
you're
it,
not yeah. going to be with us any longer, you will still be alive. But yeah, you won't be on Earl Grey anymore.
I hope so.
We're going to have to adapt and adjust to your absence. And I'll just make up the book references.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
But yeah, I will miss that too. And if there were any way for me to keep doing it, I would. It was just like there would be some weeks where it would just be like wall to wall, like work and podcasts. And it was getting to be a bit too much. And I was feeling like it wouldn't be sustainable for me to keep bringing to the show what I wanted to. So.
Yeah, no, and absolutely, completely understand. And, you know, this is a hobby and this is supposed to be fun. And when it stops being fun and a
chore, not that it stopped being fun.
Well,
it's that my life couldn't accommodate the time to do it anymore. So it never stopped being fun. I've always loved doing this with you guys, but it was just like I didn't have a chance to like rest during the week sometimes because, you know, I take it seriously, the preparations that we do and all of that. And, you know, anyway.
But you made the smart decision of kind of stepping back before it potentially got to the point where it wasn't fun because it became a chore, it became something you had to do and you had no work-life balance essentially. And everything was just about either work or podcasting. So I totally get that. To look after yourself.
Appreciate you guys understanding. So, but I'll continue to listen and love hearing what you guys say wherever you go with it. So,
oh, I hope you will continue to listen.
Of course I will.
Justin, like we only understand because you're here. See, when you're not here, but like Justin, I sure hate him.
Yeah,
stinking leftist.
Next week, Joe will be like, man, that Justin. I'm glad he's gone, let's have real fun.
Anyway.
No.
What was his surname about? What is Ozer? I've never heard of that. It's made up. Yeah, totally like that.
Yeah, but.
Well, talking about next week, listeners, let's give you a quick preview. Next week, Joe and I will be covering the time travel episodes from the Fan Collective sets. And those episodes include Cause and Effect, Time's Arrow Part 1 and 2, which we will miss Justin for, and All Good Things. So, Joe, we're getting back to some time travel.
Seriously.
Going to mess with your brain.
I'm trying to think, what is Tylenol or what's the really strong stuff that people get addicted to? Oxycodone.
Oh, dear.
So I'm going to try to think of American things that we don't have over here. Things that I'm going to need if we're talking for
some
time
opiates.
Travel. For a whole episode.
Yeah.
Even though I have got like a super understanding of physics, time travel just bakes my noodle.
Well, we're going to bake your noodle next week.
And Joe, I will be listening. So you do need to mention
Justin.
Time travel is a villain.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah,
but that'll be fun.
Well, it's been so much fun talking about badass Guinan moments, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think the difference is that Flashback is intentionally trying to carve Voyager a little place within the fabric of the undiscovered country, say, and it's trying to place Tuvok. Well, it's trying almost to to retcon, isn't it? Because Tim Russ was in that film as one of the Excelsior crew, so it's trying to do a retcon. And say,
he was in Generations. He wasn't even in that film. That's the
wasn't he?
He was like, and I suppose it's a Brannon Braga episode as well. Brannon Braga wrote Generations. Brannon Braga, I suppose, must have realised maybe unconsciously realised that Tim Russ was in Generations as a different character.
He was,
so
wasn't
it's,
he?
It's almost like a weird. Sort of
I've got that wrong, you're right.
I wonder whether unconsciously on some level that's the connection you're supposed to be sort of slipping into. And of course that he was serving on an Excelsior class ship.
Earl Grey.
I want to see that spaceship that's got giant space-time knitting needles.
Yeah.
and they just like do that like as they warp through space fixing it behind themselves. That'd be awesome.
Literary Treks.
The one that I left out that in hindsight I regret it is the one where he's is it Wink of an Eye where he's fighting the guy in the quarters and he actually throws a pillow at the other guy and it hits him in the face and stops him dead in his tracks for 2 seconds long enough for Kirk to get the upper hand on him. And I just, I'm like, I don't even know how to describe this. You know, I don't even know what to give. I couldn't come up with a name for it. That was probably the biggest thing, is I couldn't come up with a catchy name for it. Pillow talk or something, maybe in high school.
Stopped him dead in his tracks because he's like, did you just throw
did
a pillow?
Did you just throw a pillow?
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I think I've exhausted the planet.
Well, then let me end on a funny note. The first thing I thought when I saw that senator beheaded was, well, I guess we don't need to worry about Quentin Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie anymore.
Oh, yeah, I was actually quite surprised mm-hmm. by that. But
and his blood was very bright green.
Very bright green.
But,
Yeah.
Bravo. Bring green Quentin numbers. Tarantino back.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review that helps others to find the show.
So you guys want one more bonus question? Yeah.
Yes.
Joe, this is usually your favorite part. You're like, no.
It's the last bonus question. Yeah, as you say, all good things should come to an end. Okay, then.
There's a time and season for everything.
I mean, you guys can keep doing the bonus questions if you want. It's totally up to you. But so we talked about badass Guinan moments today. We talked about it a little bit, but what is the thing that you want to see most from Guinan being on season 2 of Picard?
I don't know if I'm the right person to ask about this.
Just project forward, what would it make you happy to be like, oh, we're going to talk about that part of Guinan, or she'll interact with this character or something like that?
I think, honestly, what I like about Guinan is the fact that she tells you everything and nothing at the same time. And you get...
So you want more of that?
Yeah, you've got the Guinan. Imagine Guinan as a giant jigsaw puzzle. And she'll give you a piece, but then take 5 away because those 5 that you had no longer make sense. And so the overall arc that is Guinan, the jigsaw that is Guinan, never, it's like a jigsaw that moves. Now where all the pieces kind of move, and more if it's like a 4-dimensional kind of time Rubik's Cube puzzle, where there is actually no solution to it. Yeah. I want to see that. Not getting into the jigsaw puzzle, but just continuing to do what she does best and give us, help the characters be insightful and tell us nothing and everything. Hope that made sense.
Sure.
No, it did not at all. Of this.
Same, like Guinan. I think I'm like Guinan.
Like
yes.
Guinan, yes.
Amy?
Well, when you asked that and thinking about our conversation, like how many different conversations and relationships that she had with our lovely crew of the Enterprise D, I want her to have those conversations. Like, I want her to, you know, interact with Soji. I think that is going to be very powerful. And like her interacting with Raffi. You know, helping her with her addiction and, you know, her situation with her son. And and of course, her interaction with Picard, but getting to see her interactions with everyone, I think, is what makes her awesome. So,
yeah.
Can I,
I was thinking
sorry,
about
Justin,
that too.
Can I go put a little addendum on what I want to see? Which
sure,
I think
will
is maybe
more or
the,
less confusing.
The most important thing that I would like to see from Guinan in season 2 of Picard. Is
yes.
a big hat.
A hat,
oh,
yeah.
Yes.
That's true. Maybe fashion is different.
No.
I know, they took away the Romulan shoulder pads. I'm thinking the hat might be a little bit smaller.
No, I think the hat's going to get bigger, but also double as her spacecraft. It'll unfold, it'll envelop her, and she'll be able to just walk out an airlock and zoom off.
Oh, it's wow. her personal transporter.
Oh, there comes... Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I like it, Amy.
I think it'll be smaller because the thing that shields her from temporal changes, they'll have,
They've improved the technology.
The technology will get better.
Yeah, technology makes things smaller, yeah. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So. Maybe like a tiny little hat. Like a tiny, tiny little top hat.
All right, Justin, what do you want to see most?
Well, I mean, you talked about characters and interactions. I'm thinking as much about characters we've already seen. I would love to see Guinan and Q again and get at what the heck that was about that they were talking about in Q Who. But also, like, you know, I had a couple of moments here with Worf and LaForge where she was kind of giving them some lessons, and it would be so interesting to see her with Worf or LaForge just to see, like, where they've come to, what they can share about their experience and all of that. I just think... I don't know. I'd just like to see her interact with a bunch of people. We just have like the season of Guinan where she just like meets everybody that she ever interacted with on TNG. And anyway, so yeah, but I'm looking forward to it and we'll see who she interacts with. Okay. So now that we've gone through that, if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So Joe, where can people contact you when you're telling us nothing but something?
I thought I'd always... like told you really lots of good things that are all going to turn out to be true, but when I'm not being super truthful, which is all the time,
you so when you're lying, okay.
Oh no, it's double. Wait. Negative. I don't know. I'm still laughing inside about a tiny top hat.
Yeah
like the Monopoly piece. Do you guys have the same Monopoly pieces as
yes. we do?
Okay, I think so.
Like there's a boat, there's a car, there's top hat. There's an iron, for ironing your clothes.
Think so.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when I'm not doing any of that or playing Monopoly, you can get me on. You can tweet me on the Twitter at JoeyJoe77UK. That's the way I like to say it. It sounds ye old fashioned. You can tweet me on the Twitter.
Does.
You can email me joepodcast@gmail.com, and you can get me on the Babel Conference. Babel conferencing. And Justin, where can people contact you when you're not wearing tiny hats?
I'm wearing a tiny hat right now. It's just so small you can't see it.
I'm sure I saw a shadow.
Yeah, I have a tiny, tiny Guinan hat. Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting The Line. That's our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast. Have a great time with my friends Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shea Matala talking about Picard episodes as they come out. We've just got, I think when this one comes out, there's only going to be one more episode of Picard left. So, wow, future people, you know what happens in episode 9. We're going to do that, and then the show will become a little bit less frequent, but we will still continue to talk all things Picard. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek and tiny hats, and you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not, let's see, saying that Troy is the best counselor, not Guinan?
Well, I am always doing that. I will defend Troy to the end. You can find me over on United Federation of Podcasts, hosting a show called All Good Things with my good friend Patrick Devlin. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and you can find me on the Facebook in the Babel Conference.
Would you be Facebook in there?
I would be Facebook in there and conferencing. Yeah.
You guys are sounding much older than you actually are.
Yeah, I was born in 1832. If you'd like to help us keep our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits and more, available through our special patrons website, PatronZone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host and distribute these shows each month. We'd really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers. They are Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Trebuzio, Jim McMahon, Joe Keegan, and Justin Ozer. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey. So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
There was a young man named Justin, after whose podcasts listeners were a-lustin'. On Earl Grey 317, he announced his time had been, and on the line he'll be Picardin.
Oh, that's wonderful, Joe, that you actually wrote something for a limerick. Oh. Oh, the limerick. Well, I'm including this limerick in that things are only impossible until they're not.
Great joy and gratitude.
Well, not in the moment.
Thank you.
Ma'am.
Yes.
Be it me. It be me.
Joe, it's you.
Yes, yeah, so you didn't. It's always funny when I like lose track of the outline and you whisper, Joe. It's like, don't need to whisper.
Every week.
Like 2 weeks. Well, 3 weeks ago, you messed up.
It's, well, that's different, but with it's you, common. It's every week.
Mm. Yes. Thank you, Justin.
Do you know, next time I edit, I'm just going to edit out Amy, and it'll just be me and the guests.